Macy's has all of your Grillmaster essentials for Father's Day. Stop by to get our hand-trimmed chicken breast and certified Angus beef patties that are ready to grill so Dad can have his favorite dinner. Make sure to browse our bakery to find the perfect no-work Father's Day treat with our decadent peanut butter bars or famous donuts. Right now, you can get boneless beef ribeye steaks for $12.99 per pound at Macy's. Shop these Father's Day essentials in-store or online at Macy's.com through June 18th. Macy's, happy shopping!
Live electricity wires are always near, and coming close to them can be dangerous. So always ask yourself, are you sure it's safe? Look out for electricity wires above and below you. If in doubt, call us on 1-800-372-999. It might just save your life. ESB Networks. Stay safe and stay clear of electricity wires.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump, right? In today's episode, we answered listeners' questions, but this was after an intro portion. Today was 55 minutes long. Now, in the intro portion, we talk about current events and family life. We talk about science, fitness, of course. It's a lot of fun. After that, we get to the questions. By the way, if you want to ask us a question, if you want to post the question that we can pick for an episode like this one, go to Instagram at Mind Pump Media. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is ButcherBox. So this company takes grass-fed meat, heritage pork, pasture-raised chicken, and delivers it to your door. It's inexpensive. It's healthy. It's really good. Go check them out. Get yourself a discount and get some free meat. Go to butcherbox.com/mindpump, and you can actually choose wild-caught salmon, organic chicken breast, or grass-fed ground beef included in your box for an entire year, plus get $20 off. This episode is also brought to you by Paleo Valley. Today we talked about their chocolate bone broth protein. I've said this before. I stand by it. It is literally the best-tasting protein I've ever had in my entire life. It's delicious. Go check it out. Go to paleovalley.com/mindpump, and on that link, you'll get 15% off. We also have a sale this month, a big one. One of our most popular programs, MAPS Muscle Mommy, 50% off, half off. This is for those of you women out there that want to be a muscle mommy. That's what we wrote it for. Go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code October50 if you want to get that program with 50% off discount. All right, back to the show. Here are the six best inexpensive high-protein foods you can get at Walmart. Bulk chicken thighs, 95% ground beef, tuna fish, Greek yogurt, cottage cheese, and 95% ground turkey. Those foods right there, high protein, low calorie, inexpensive. They're great for building muscle, getting lean, and getting you to your fitness goals. And of course, best of all, you can find them anywhere, including Walmart.
I've always thought this argument was silly.
That eating healthy was expensive?
And I've never never resonated with me, because anytime I'm eating out, that's when my bills go up.
That's why people think eating healthy is expensive, because they think of eating
restaurants.
Yes, they think of healthy restaurants, the ones that are crunchy healthy, versus like unhealthy restaurants like McDonald's or Burger King versus, you know, that boutique restaurant down the street that's supposed to be healthy.
Farm raised or farm to tables.
That it's expensive, but when you go shop, you go grocery shopping for your food, it's far, and we're not even counting, by the way, the savings in healthcare costs, you know, because you're going to be healthier. We're not counting the savings in productivity, because you're going to call in sick less to work. You're going to work, be more productive. You're probably going to earn more money. Like, all the things that happen when you're healthy actually save you money. We're not even counting that. We're just looking at the cost of the food. When you buy these things in bulk, by the way, I didn't throw vegetables or starches in there, but you buy a bag of rice, potatoes, frozen vegetables, all the things that I said in there. You've got everything you need, and it's not just inexpensive, it's the least expensive.
Well, that's the easy stuff to get. I mean, protein is, it's not as simple in terms of it. Like, I could just go down the street. I'm like, you have to really be intentional and targeted. This is what, these types of foods is what kept me sane when I was in college as a starving student. Because, like, all my options were always just like really heavy carb based in the cafeteria, and it just got exhaustive. And so to be able to have like a little grill, like in my little dorm room, and then like get like turkey and like make patties and like do all this stuff and buy, you know, this meat in bulk was game changer.
I just did this yesterday. So, or no, the Sunday, right? Today's Tuesday. So
which
I did
meal prep.
Yeah. It was 6 pounds of ground beef. Like and I did had to fill up the, my rice cooker twice to enough bulk rice. So I don't know how many, I think I had to do like 12 cups of rice or something like that is what it ended up being. And ground beef. And all I threw in there was I seasoned it with Montreal steak seasoning. I think is great on ground beef like that. And I threw some onions and mushrooms in there just to give it a little more flavor and texture. And then I add it to white rice, one cup of white rice. I mean, and now I've got a breakfast and lunch for the entire week. And if you're not somebody who can just eat rice and meat for breakfast, you can crack 2 eggs on it and boost the protein you like. And now it's like a breakfast, you know, bowl.
Oh, I mean, there was a period there when I first opened my own personal training studio. There was a period there where I was just trying to be very conservative with my money. It was a new business. You know, I had my first kid, and I wanted to be very smart about my money. And so I ate a lot of ground beef, rice, and frozen vegetables. I would make bowls with it, and it's what I ate most of the time. And it's actually simultaneously great muscle building food. Yes. It's great getting lean food. It's great food also, but it's also very inexpensive. So this whole argument about it, you know, being expensive is so wrong, and it's damaging. It's actually damaging to believe this. The truth is, just on a dollar for dollar basis, it's far less expensive. And then on top of it, like I said, we're not even counting all the other cost savings that happen from just being healthy. I mean, if you look at the data, and by the way, the reason why I know this data is because when I managed gyms, we used to do, we would sell memberships to typical consumers, you know, person walking in or person that lives in the neighborhood or whatever, but we'd also sell what were called corporate memberships. And corporate memberships were where you would go to these large organizations, these companies, and the company would pay a fee to cover the enrollment costs of X amount of employees. And sometimes, if you did a real good job, the company would cover the entire cost. So you'd go to a company like Apple, and they'd say, yeah, we'll buy memberships for anybody who wants to come work out at your gym. And they'd give us a big check, and it was a big deal. And so one of the ways that we would sell these memberships is we had to present them with data. Because for a company to do this, A, it has to attract more employees, and B, there has to be some kind of cost benefit. Otherwise, it's like, okay, why are we offering this perk? Is it going to give us something in return? And the truth is, the gym memberships did all of the above. Not only did employees like it, because now they have a gym they can work out at, so it's a cool perk, it also saved them money to the tune of, for every dollar that a company invested in fitness and health for their employees, they would get back $2 in return. That return came in the form of reduced insurance costs, so people get sick less. They're healthier, cost the company less money to cover them under insurance. They also called in sick less. So people they weren't absent as often because they were fit and healthy or more fit and more healthy. And they were also more productive. So it's like every dollar you spend, you get $2 in savings as a company. And this is real data. We were real good at figuring this out. I worked for a very large fitness organization that figured this out. And this was a selling point. So it's less expensive to eat healthy any way you slice it. So that whole thought process, that excuse is just, it's so false. It's not even close to the truth. It's the opposite.
It's actually even more convenient than people make it sound too.
Yes. Like,
okay, so Sunday I absolutely did dedicate a couple hours of my day to prepping. But now that it's prepped,
that's like, it, the whole week done.
It's so easy. It's all set up. And I don't overthink the like dressing it up process, you know, like literally I have a giant iron skillet, so I could throw like all 6 pounds in there at one time and like just cooked up all 6 pounds at one time and just threw the mushrooms and onions inside of there and sprinkled all the seasoning on it and just boom, that whole thing is done. And the rice cooker, everybody knows how easy a rice cooker is. You just throw it in the cooker, walk away, and it's done in like 20 minutes. Like, that's it. And then like portioning it out.
By the way, I included in here some options that required no prep on purpose or minimal prep. So you don't have to cook tuna fish. It's done. You open the can, you throw it in a bowl. You can add whatever you want to it. You don't cook Greek yogurt or cottage cheese. Those are all there. They're ready to go. In fact, you know, if you can have dairy, cottage cheese is incredible bodybuilding food. It's great. It's got high quality protein, both casein and whey. It's high in whey protein. It's you can get very low calorie cottage cheese or full fat if you want a little bit more of that texture, a little bit more calories. And you can buy it, a 50 gram protein serving of cottage cheese, throw some fruit in it, and boom, you've got yourself all your great macro breakdown, and it required zero prep. You go to any grocery store, you buy a peach, you buy your cottage cheese, slice it up, throw it in there, you're done. You know, and I gave those options on purpose because the other argument is always, well, I don't have time. I don't have the time to you know, get the food ready.
Yeah, I mean, I find that it saves time, saves money for me every time I do it. Every time I do it, I'm always like, man, I just, and I always have that excuse of, oh, I'm so busy, I might do this. And it's just like, if I just make one day of the week, for me, Sundays tend to be the easiest because getting ready to set the week up, we're typically home Sunday afternoon or evening, that I carve away a couple hours that I prep these meals out for the week. Then you're, and to me, I think that having it there and ready is what makes it easier to make the right decision. It's always challenging when you have a busy life, you have a family, kids, and you're trying to make every meal and a healthy choice that day.
Then and there.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe you get a couple wins in a row like that, but you know, sooner or later life happens and you get busy and you get behind and you skip a meal and now you're trying to play catch up. Just having something already prepared in the refrigerator makes things so much easier, you know?
Oh, yeah. The cooking in bulk is everything. I was trying to think of the type of cooker. Shows you how much I cook. I was like thinking grill, and that's like all I know. the one that's like you put it in, and then you leave it for like all day, and it just cooks it really slow. Crock pot. Yeah. So like anytime like Courtney leaves or like I'm trying to like, you know, be ahead of – you know, and prep for the week and all that stuff, like we'll just put like a big old pork butt in there and like, you know, and then you can just make all kinds of stuff out of that and add some rice. But it's just like if you do that ahead of time and you could just pick at that throughout the week, so much
easier. When I had my personal training studio, I had either I would prep or if I was real lazy, you know what I had in the back? I had a Foreman grill.
Yeah,
it was easy. I had ground.
That was my go-to in college.
I had ground beef in, and we had a little fridge, you know. Yeah. And I'd pull it out, throw it in there while you know my finishing up with the client. To walk back, throw it in, come back, done with my client, go back, it's finished, and then I eat it real fast before I train the next client. Super easy.
I lived off of that for a long time.
Oh yeah,
the crock pot is just one of my favorite go-tos. We haven't cracked into that on this prep for me yet, but that's always something because I can fit like 3-4 pounds of chicken thighs in there.
Oh,
and you get chicken thighs in there and it just falls apart. Mm-hmm. And then you get like shredded chicken, and then I make bowls.
Slow cook.
I go so shredded nice chicken what over was it rice for, what with was a little bit of green salsa and cheese.
Now, what was it from Butcher Box that you were using the crock pot that you were like, you guys got to try it? Was it ribs?
No, not ribs for the crock pot.
No.
That was the shoulder. Whoever was doing the shoulder in there.
Oh,
that's one of these two guys. That wasn't me. I get the chicken thighs from there.
And you put the chicken.
Oh yeah, the chicken in the crock pot is amazing because it makes it so moist. You literally just pulls apart.
All their chicken is pasture raised. All of the Butcher Box chicken is So you get just a better nutrient profile. And I noticed the same thing with grass fed meat. If I eat a lot of pasture-raised chicken, grass-fed meat, heritage pork, I seem to feel better than when I switch. I'm okay with meat no matter what.
It's the balanced chicken, and I was kind of looking at that because they don't have like the enormous breasts that are like totally like hormone, you know, injected and like antibiotics and all that. But I was watching a video. I was asking Adam about this because he used to work, you know, in the with the farm and whatnot. And I saw this video of this chicken coop that had wheels on it. And so what they did was they were able to rotate through the pasture. Like it just slowly moved. So the bottom's open and the chickens can freely like, you know, pick for insects and they can eat grass and all that kind of stuff. And then, that way when they shit and the fertilizer, like it distributes that evenly throughout the pasture. And I was like, this is brilliant.
So when I was in high school, I was one of the only five organic dairies in all of California. And so the guy I work for.
Was that just coincidence or did you look for one?
I didn't even know what organic was. I learned what organic was in high school. Remember, that wasn't a popular thing back when we were kids.
By the way. How did you even know you're going to be in the fitness industry?
No idea. Nor did I even have any. I learned from him what organic was. I didn't know what an organic dairy, organic farm, none of that, what that even meant. And it was working there that I learned all this stuff. And so he was always forward thinking on, I feel really bad because that dairy ended up going out of business. I really think a lot of it was he was just too far ahead of his time, because the organic movement didn't come until 10 years later after that. But he was also, so he used to go to New Zealand. New Zealand in the dairy industry and the farming industry is ahead of us in a lot of of ways, just the way they structure their cattle farms, the way they do their chickens.
We still get a lot of the cattle from there.
And so I remember we built this thing, and I remember, what are we doing? So he bought this cheap, trailer. It was just a regular old car trailer or whatever, and we built wood frames on it, built a house on it, and it was a chicken coop. And then the chicken coop had a little door that came down. It was a little ramp for them to go in and out. And then we had because it was a trailer, it just hits right on the quad. And then every day I would come into work, I'd have to move it about 50 yards.
Wow.
And it allows the chickens to come out and they graze on all the bugs and everything like that that's in there. And they pick through all that. They also poop all over that, so it doubles as fertilizer for the grass, for the cows that come back and graze on it, because we also had the organic dairy.
It's so smart.
And so we used to do all that. It was I didn't know what the hell we're doing. I don't know why or what the big deal is, but I just remember doing it back then. And so it's interesting to hear that Butcher Box is doing that with the chickens.
Dude, because it's so funny we're talking about this. I have found this area where I can really connect with my 3.5-year-old, really connect. He seems to be really into science and learning, which is great, because as a dad, you really want to connect with your kids. And sometimes they're not into things that you're into. So you have to really make yourself be into what they're into so you can connect to them. Luckily, I'm blessed. He's really into science. And the way I figured this out is I was hanging out with him and we're talking. And off the top, I'm always trying to think of things to spur conversation and hang out with him, not have to use the TV or play with him. And sometimes you want to play, but I was tired. So I'm like, I want to talk about something. So I said, hey, do you know what a carnivorous plant is? He's like, what? He knows the word carnivore from dinosaurs. We talk about dinosaurs. So I started talking about Venus flytraps. So we learned all about Venus flytraps. I ordered one. We now have one. So we did that. Then we talked about,
I said, those are always fun.
They're great, right? Aren't they great? By the way, you can buy them on Amazon. Did you know that? You can buy a Venus flytrap.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Yeah. So we get it. And it's been so fun, by the way. We have in the backyard. Mm-hmm. And, we watered it. And then yesterday I went out to the front yard and I caught a little bug. And then I put it in the mouth of it.
Yeah, feed spiders.
He was jumping ups and down. He was so excited. Oh my God.
I'll have to do that. Max will get a kick out of that.
So he would love it because of Mario.
His last Mario stuffed animal was the piranha.
Perfect.
Plant. Yeah. So
we did that. I was just thinking off the top of my head, what else is cool? And I'm like, Mexican jumping beans. Did you guys ever own those when you were a kid?
I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember that. By the way, do you guys know they're seeds? They're not beans. They're seeds.
They're seeds?
Yeah. Do you know why they jump?
It's worms.
There's a worm in there, and the reason why it jumps is the worm is trying to get the seed from a place that's hot to a place that's cooler. So when the sun moves and the shade moves, they jump around, and because of the shape of the seed, it'll flip. It's got two flat surfaces, and eventually will move to where it's cooler. I only learned this because I'm going doing this.
Of course.
So we got those. Then we got magnets. I've been doing this throughout the weeks, right? We got magnets. We're learning about magnetism. Such a great time. Just for dads out there, if you have kids.
Yeah, no, I'm totally going to steal that.
And it's fun. It's really fun.
I'm going to steal the fly trap.
Colonies. Haven't done that stuff. Yet. It's funny because even Everett's still into that stuff. Yeah. And we'll take bugs and we'll feed it to the ants and watch them devour them. And, and then we'll take our magnifying glass out and burn stuff.
I did that with him.
It's a good time.
That is fun, but you got to be careful.
Yeah.
If you leave the magnifying glass out, that can start fires for sure.
We're contained, but we're total pyros. Yeah. So it's I gotta also recognize that I did a lot of worse things. I made it out okay, so but I do kind of we gotta at least be a little more reasonable.
Do you know there's a theory that I think it was the Greeks used a massive device that reflected the sun,
a big mirror, like a gold mirror.
Wasn't that on that ancient Greek show or whatever like that?
Probably.
I thought it was on that one.
And they tried to build one to see if they could. Yeah. Kind of cool, right?
That is cool. You know, we yesterday I felt bad for Katrina because yesterday is like our really long day here, right? I didn't get out of here till really late. And we had our first really bad spill, right? I've talked to you guys in the show, right, since we've started about Max's journey barefoot and like just he's been incredible, like his stability and everything. Oh, like that. Yeah. We had our first like real like bad fall.
Oh no.
Yeah, I mean it like scraped up his knees, his elbow.
Oh, poor kid.
Like,
what was he doing?
Like he was running, you know, running and playing with kids and then bailed. Yeah, and I mean I didn't see it happen, right? So it sounds like he just, you know, tripped over his feet or tripped over something while he was running hard and just asphalt and just knees, elbows, everything skinned up really, really bad. And just, I guess he broke down and was crying and wanted his mom and everything like that. And they finally calmed him down. And he's constantly asking, when's my mom get there? And then she gets there. And he is just like, I mean, my overly sensitive son, if you can only imagine, who's never fall like this, is just, I mean, I call Katrina before I get home. I'm like, what are you doing? And she's just like, I haven't moved from the couch all day. Like, he's just, if I get up to go to the bathroom.
He's devastated.
Oh, yeah. He is just, and he's doing the whole, like, he can't walk. Okay, I come down the stairs this morning, right? And he's over the top right now. He tells I'm like half awake because they get up a little bit earlier than me, and he's in the room and Katrina's already up and out of the shower, and he's sitting on the bed next to me, and Katrina's like, okay, we need to go get ready for her. And he's like, I don't think I can go to school today. And she's like, are you sure, son? And she's like, because you, and she tells him, you can stay home with me, but mommy's got to work all day, which means no cartoons, no iPad, you know, but if you want to play with your toys and read books all day, you can stay here with mom. And he's like, you can tell he's like thinking about that. Like, oh, yeah, I don't know if I can go to school. I don't know if I can do it. Well, let's try. Let's get downstairs. Try. I come downstairs and he tells Katrina, he says, the backpack is too heavy. I can't put the backpack on. So Katrina takes the water bottle out of this and that. No, I think she's like, okay, do you want me to get your old backpack that you used to carry when you were four? You could carry. You were 4 years old when you carried that backpack. He's like, okay, let me try that one, right? So she switches out the backpack, dude. Just, and the way he's moving is like, he comes over. She goes, give your dad a hug goodbye. And he comes, he's like, walking. I said, what are you, 90? I said, come on, buddy, you're gonna be okay. I pick him up and give him a big hug. I said, hey, you know what's something about us Schaefers, you know we're strong and resilient, right? We're tough. Like when we fall down, we get back up. And I kind of give him that, okay, daddy. Turns around, he's like walking out the house just so slow, dude. And Katrina's just
mummied out.
Just, yeah, that's literally what he's doing. It's like all mummied out.
Bro,
he's like,
both my kids have pulled that shit
dude,
on me,
dude. Dragging his feet. And they're decent scratches, but I mean, it's just like, I mean, they're just some scratches.
You imagine these kids being, I don't know, like my older kids, you imagine these kids get you know, raised by 80s parents like we were.
Did you see, okay, there's a viral.
Oh, you broke your leg, walk it off.
There's a viral comedy, there's a viral comedy clip going right now. I was watching it, literally, it was so funny that this is the conversation, what I just saw. And then on the way to work, I saw this thing come up in my reels, and it's a guy who's talking about what happened to all the kids in Cast. He's like, yeah. When I grew up in school,
everybody,
you come to school, it looked like I forget, dude, what he said.
Good point.
He said he made some analogy of like an old like paraplegic, like and he's like, someone's foot is up on the desk. Another person's like,
everyone's signing.
Cast. He's like, when was the last time you signed a cast? Kids don't. He's like,
I don't even know if
that's a good.
My
point.
Kids have even done that,
bro. He literally made that. He's like, cast. Yes,
that's a good point.
When I was a kid, so many casts.
There was always one or two kids.
Always
at any moment in
always had some sort of a cast on. He goes, you don't ever see that anymore. Everything is emotional now. Everything is anxiety, emotional. Nothing is physical anymore. They're never physically broken anymore. They're emotionally broken.
What if it's a trade-off? You know what I mean? What if it's like you either hurt yourself physically or you suffer?
Like you need to go through something.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm throwing something out there. I don't know. It was wild when we were kids.
I don't know. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like we've tried to kind of clean up some of the, like, I'm going to actually like pay attention as a parent, you know, and like see, you know, but I think that's turned into, bro, like, no, you can't climb on,
bro,
that.
When
no,
we
you
were
can't
kids,
do this.
Listen, when we were kids in the 80s, when we were little kids in the 80s, cars had ashtrays. Okay, everybody? Your parents smoked in the car while they're driving with you, and you were not in a car seat. I don't even think anybody had
with
a car
the
seat.
Windows up.
No. You were sitting, yeah, bro. No, bro. You were sitting probably
the
on the
pickup,
lap,
laying down, like,
yeah,
breathing gasoline.
Oh,
like,
man.
Literally, the gas tank was like right.
So
my
okay,
head.
This is so. Then it's probably the same. I mean, that's a great extreme analogy, right? Of okay, so we've probably corrected that, right? For the good.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Just like, we probably don't need kids and broken arms and legs all over the place, right?
It's not like a necessity.
So we've corrected. We've corrected for the good, but like anything else, like everything else, we've overcorrected.
Yeah.
And there's unintended consequences of overcorrection. You know, so overcorrection of the physical injuries all the time is now we get emotional injuries all the time. Now their feelings get hurt.
Which one's worse?
I don't know, dude. I definitely think I definitely think the emotional one's way worse because I feel like the physical thing is a
bro. I had a high school freshman year. This is a real PE teacher. This is real, everybody. He was a teacher, and if a kid didn't refuse to get in the pool to swim because you had to go through that whole 2 month period of swimming, he would throw him in.
Oh my God, I saw
him throw kids fully clothed. In the pool.
Every you know what happened if a teacher just did their that? Their head exploded right now.
That's for real. I almost want to say his name because it's legit. I don't know if I'll get him in trouble.
This is where Katrina and I are different because I'm so.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, hey, sink or swim.
This weekend we were just over at my sister-in-law's house. They have a pool, and we're all outside, and Max is on the other side of the pool, and he's kind of doing his own thing, and he's walking close to the edge, and Katrina's like, Max, I'm like, let him go. If he falls in the pool, I'll go get him.
You know what I'm saying? It's like
he's gonna drown in 5 seconds. I'm like, I'm right here.
Someone's got a statistic probably to count.
Oh God, of course. 5 seconds. Yeah. Hey, you know what? That's what led to all this fucking emotional anxiety and problems right there, bro. Is the one statistic of the one kid that drowned in 5 seconds is why everybody freaks out. I'm like, trust me, he'll fall in the pool. I'll get over there in time. We'll be fine.
That was the same kid with all the food intolerances. and all the allergies.
That's different.
Come on,
that's different.
I said, guess what? He'll probably learn the next time he won't get that close to the pool when he falls.
You guys are going too far now.
No, I don't know.
You know why? Because this is a dad over here the same way.
I just have vivid memories. I'm like at the dog park and my dogs are doing their thing and I'm like trying to watch them. But then my kids are climbing trees and then like all these other parents are kind of walking around. They're like, oh my God, look at these kids. And like, they're pointing them out. And then there's, yay, have the great old time. Like, oh yeah, they're going to have to figure out how to climb back down, And they're just like freaking out. They're just like, are you serious? Like, I swear to God, I thought one of them was thinking about calling CPS.
Look up pictures of school, of playgrounds in the
80s. They were already.
This was a school playground.
I broke my arm on like a huge monkey bar.
First of all, they were way higher.
That's actually probably statistically, we talk about.
That's what everybody
broke. Almost everybody broke their arm on the monkey bar.
Monkey bars were the worst.
Yes. Hey, did you guys see someone break their arm at the playground?
Yeah, I did. I remember a monkey bar. I actually can picture this. I remember monkey bars that were not quite as tall as the crazy ones back in the 60s they show you, but it was
good. Oh yeah, but you ever see the 60s
but list? I do remember that they're inside this it was in a sandbox. It was dirt. There was a pipe that ran underneath
it.
So why? Waiting for some kid to just fall and crack his arm or skull on it.
Well, they're all like composite flooring and stuff. When we were kids, the best you would get if you were lucky was Tambar.
Yeah.
If you were lucky. Look at that playground, bro.
I know.
What decade is that?
That's like 100 years ago.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Man. Look what kids used to play on.
The glory days.
You guys, listen, I wouldn't go up that. Right now, as an adult, I'd be terrified. Little kids used to climb up.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is pretty wild.
It is really.
But yeah, when we were, I mean, you remember when it was hot outside, you go get on the slide, you melt your hand because it was all metal. It burned you.
I almost sliced my big toe off, because I slid down with no shoes on, and it caught the corner.
Now, like a rough edge. Do we come back or do we just keep going this way? Like, do we start to appreciate that? Okay. There was some value in allowing these kids to be able to learn the hard way in some of these things. And do we start to go back to that
direction?
I'm not
sure there's enough parents on board with like the old methods.
I think you could go too far. I think
were these parents right here, right, that had kids that grew up in the 20s saying things about us who grew up in the 60s and the 80s, right?
Weren't saying that. They were saying this is good because in the 20s they were working in factories.
Exactly. They didn't have playgrounds.
So they're like, this is great. Your children are playing. Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm on this kick because I watched that Masters of Air. Doug brought up Band of Brothers.
I went back
to watch that again because it's been so long.
Great movie.
I don't even remember half of that series. Katrina and I are really enjoying it. And I just can't. I'm just all I'm thinking about is like these 20-year-old boys that willingly went to across like that. And there's a scene where the guys, like one of the sergeants is talking to the guys who's got obviously crippling anxiety about it. And like he says, one of his problems is like, you are looking at this the wrong way. Like you're so scared and afraid of all this stuff like that because you're thinking whether you survive or not. Like you accept death now. Like we're not coming home. We're mm-hmm. dying. Mm-hmm. Like that's part of becoming a good soldier yeah. is recognizing you're not going to live. And it's like, that is wild to me yeah. that is like part of what been
that's
part
the
of
the mentality.
Yes. Was the process was that you just have to accept death.
Yeah.
And then that makes this process of being a good soldier and gives your chance of actually yeah. living, but you have to first accept that. It's like, that is wild. And that is wild to have done that at that age to accept that role that you're going to go do.
There's
that.
Definitely a reasonable yeah. balance. There's a reasonable balance. First off, you need to let your kids lose at sports and games. If they're playing stuff and nobody's keeping score and everybody gets a trophy, that's a big problem because the real world doesn't work that way. Number two, yeah, I would say
absolutely a problem.
Stop hoarding over your children all the time. Like let them play a little bit, let them go. And that way they feel that sense of freedom. I don't think it's a bad thing to let your kid express their feelings. I do think you can go overboard with validating everything in the sense that, yes, you really feel that way,
yeah.
but not being like, yes, it is the end of the world. Like, okay, your toy broke. For you, this is terrible. I totally get that. Versus, it is the end of the world, you know, type of deal. I think there's some reasonable ways to do this, some balance. Because if you go back to previous generations, it was a little too far in one direction. Now it's going too far, I think, in the other direction. What was that thing we saw, that stat? How many kids bring their parents to job interviews?
Oh my God. That was like 60-something percent.
It was ridiculous.
It was a way high number.
It was more than 0%, which should be the right number. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
0% is the correct answer. Yeah. It should be.
Yeah.
So whatever, anything over that,
it was a high percent. Maybe it wasn't 65. Maybe it was 35.
Our Tommy, it was definitely
more than a quarter of these kids were bringing their parents to a job interview.
I did a lot of interviews,
right? I can only imagine if some kids showed up to my
job
with their parent. I mean, I would look at the parent and be like, he's not getting this job because of you, right?
You know, he's failing because of what you guys have done.
Yeah.
You've done a terrible job.
You showed up. Yeah. The fact you showed up for his interview, he's not getting this job.
Still wipe his ass?
Yeah. Yeah. Unless I'm going to get you here working all the time.
Yeah, him. Are you both applying?
Are you guys part of this deal? Actually, I'm interested.
Yeah, yeah, I am.
Three for one. Yeah, right,
it's 26%. So it was just over 25% in person interviews.
26%. One out of four.
That is so high.
Brings their mom or their dad.
That's
to an interview.
Are we just done with being embarrassed? Is that like not a thing anymore? Like people just don't get embarrassed. And
I mean,
like,
what goes?
If I ask,
goes through your head that you think that's a good idea?
I don't know why. I know, what's the thought process? I'm trying to think of it right now.
And then as a parent, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing thinking that's a good idea?
Yeah.
I mean, you can, drop off your kid and leave maybe if they don't have a car.
But do you think maybe that's what's included in
that? No, this means bring a parent to a job interview.
Yeah.
Literally.
Dude. 26% physically present in the interview room.
That is crazy to me.
Yeah. What does that say?
That kid probably never left the bed either, right?
Dude,
he never had his own room, his own crib.
Can I just tell you?
Wow, look at that right there.
What?
Virtual interviews. 71% respondents said their parents was off camera, while 29% admitted their parent was visible on screen. So 3/4 of you have your parents sitting in the room listening to how you do with your interview, and 29% of you let them sit right next to you on the Zoom call. Weird.
And what are they doing? Coaching them behind the camera? Like behind the, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Tell him about that award you got.
Tell him about your participation trophy. Tell him about
If I went to my dad,
you fed the homeless that one time.
Hey, I got my first job when I was like 14 or 15 too. If I told my dad, hey, Papa, I'm going to go interview for a job, he'd be like, oh, good job. Can you come with me? Oh, you need a ride? No. Can you sit in there while I do an interview? He would have looked at me like, is this a joke?
Do you want me to slap you?
Or did I totally fail as a father? Like, what's going on here? That's hilarious.
Oh. I need to cut you off from everything.
Anyway, hey, speaking of family, I got to tell you guys. Okay, so I told you guys how I made those protein popsicles with the chocolate bone broth protein.
Yeah, how did that go over?
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I got to do that again.
No. So you use coconut milk or macadamia nut milk or almond milk, freeze it. That's it. And you make little popsicles for your kids, and it's protein. It's mostly protein. Well, what I did is I also made the ice cream and the Ninja Creami.
Oh, you guys are
no affiliation. They need to sponsor us. Bro, it is delicious. It's coconut wild. Milk though from the can, so it's got that.
I want to try that because I know that you. I know that you.
Otherwise, can't. It's like a slushy, right? You need to have a little bit of fat to give it that creamy.
Yeah. That's why. That's why. I never tried coconut milk, especially from the can, whereas I know that's
creamy. It is whipped up. It is like ice cream. It is so good.
Okay.
So good.
I'll try that. I mean, I'm so sold on that thing. I think it's so fascinating. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand the science. I just don't. Because that the same thing I go like this in a shaker cup that makes like liquid. Yeah. You put it in that thing and it comes out ice cream. Like that doesn't make sense
to me. What's happening here?
Yeah, where is the science at? Yeah, I don't understand. And it just looks like it's a thing that does this. So I'm like, this doesn't make sense.
It's put that on the periodic table. Yeah.
It's something about how it must mix air in at a certain rate that create that texture. It's got to be what it is. By the way,
there's some science happening. It's very obvious to me. It's very obvious that
you guys from liquid to solid to slushy to
ice cream. Adam's getting on the phone with them trying to sponsor. Listen, explain the sciences. this is a good point though, because it just goes to show you how much of a role texture plays in palatability. It's the same flavor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's everything the same. The difference is the texture.
And it makes me feel like I'm eating ice cream.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's the texture, but just goes to show how complex palatability is and what these food companies can do to make food irresistible. And one of them is texture. They'll just master the texture of a food along with all these other things and make things so completely irresistible. In fact, you don't want to trip off something. This is so Jackie, sometimes she shares some really, really cool studies. So check this one out. So there's an established scientific criteria for determining if something is addictive. And this was established for tobacco products. So when they were trying to establish like, what is the criteria that we can use to judge whether or not something is addictive? This started and is based off of tobacco. And then they use this for other things like, other drugs are addictive or other things are addictive based off this criteria. You guys want to know what fits the criteria as addictive based off of this established scientific, basis or whatever? Highly processed foods. Mm-hmm. Highly processed foods fit this criteria. If you base it off of what we use to determine whether or not other things are addictive, like tobacco, if you base it off that, highly processed foods fit that criteria. So they are indeed addictive based off of that context.
And the fact that we need a study for that.
I know, but people argue it. They try to argue it.
It's like, it's hilarious when someone tries to argue that.
It's just
like,
for the trolls, that get all
triggered. This is why we have, and this is a big reason, it's not the only reason, but it's a big reason why we have an obesity epidemic. We've made food drugs, is what we did. We are serving food drugs to people. And so people are having a tough time eating an appropriate amount, so much so that they know that their health is bad and they can't stop. Mm-hmm. And this has been a creation of
it's such a snowball effect too, because it's really hard to get out of. It normally takes me a solid 3 to 4 weeks of like hard, strict diet and eating
to change the
palate and be like, oh, okay, I don't even, I don't crave it anymore. Crazy. I mean, that's how strong the cravings are. The cravings are so strong that even weeks later after not having it, you still have this pull towards it. And then you get to a point where you've disciplined yourself to stay away from it for a period of time, which is interesting. And to your point with cigarettes, I think it's much like any other addictive behavior or whatever that you do. Mm-hmm. It's like it obviously the first week of letting go of cigarettes or alcohol.
The longer you go without it, the easier it is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then you play, then you have this mind game of like, oh, I really don't even want it that bad, but maybe I'll try it and see. And that's the dangerous part of realizing that, I think I'm okay. I don't really desire it anymore. Let me see. And then it creeps back in and then you're back into that vicious cycle. And then it's really tough to get out of that.
Yeah. I firmly believe and I'm not saying this is the answer. I'm just saying, let's say I had a magic wand and we could eliminate all hyper palatable, heavily processed foods and replaced it with, whole natural foods. In other words, people still have the same access to proteins, fats, and carbs. I think we would largely solve. We would probably see obesity rates fall back to where they were, in the 50s and 60s, which was a fraction of what it is now. Again, because these foods are addictive. Mm-hmm. So,
but we never will, though.
No, it's too much money. It's so profitable.
I know.
So profitable. You can patent it. Again, the margins are so big. And the other side of it is we like them. Mm-hmm. Like people love them because we love you know, drug-like effects.
Yeah. I mean, we figured out how to make it more crunchy, more salty, more
irresistible.
Sweet. Like, yeah, it's just like it doesn't really compare unless you take it out of your diet and reintroduce actual whole foods.
You know, speaking of technology with Ninja Cream and processed foods and staying around that vein or whatever, did you guys see the virtual driver's license? California can do this now. So yeah,
Driving in virtual places?
No. So you don't need to have your license on you anymore. You basically, so nobody ever forgets their phone.
Yeah.
But how often do you forget your wallet or your driver's license or something like that? So it's now to where it can be on an app to where you can
I know. And then they'll scan it or something?
Yeah. I imagine that's exactly how it works.
Well, that makes sense.
I know. It's kind of weird that we
DMV is innovating.
Well, I don't even know if that's necessarily DMV or if it's probably like another business
another business. Like, hey, this is going to be convenient.
Oh, wow. It is DMV. Look at that. You are. Wow.
What?
Yeah.
First mobile.
But if you go into the DMV, your experience
amazing.
Is the same. Years ago. Exactly the same.
Still get a number, you know, got to look it up on the microfiche.
Yeah, that's.
There's another tech thing that I wanted to bring up, and it was on my notes like 2 weeks ago, so I'm gonna have to have Doug look it up so I can remember all the facts about it. But it was the founder from Spotify who made this. It's like a health body scanner thing. Really interesting, and I wanted to look it up together. I think it's called Neko, N-E-K-O.
Did you send this to us?
I don't think I sent it to you guys.
No, I haven't heard of that. I know one that's similar.
Yeah, it's like a health body scanner called Neko, and it was from the guy who created, I think that's it right there. Let's pull it up right here.
Oh.
the founder of Spotify did it, and it sounded...
So body scanning AI. So how does that work? I'm imagining it scans your body, and it takes some other metrics, and then is able to give you some prognosis
to be able to forecast things like cancer and heart disease, all these things.
Wow.
Like
that.
So the other one, it's called Sybil. It was through MIT. They did it just though for the lungs and figuring out like the development of lung cancer. So they take a few 3D images and then it like through its predictive algorithms kind of forecasts that like.
So this is one of the things that I think is really cool and interesting about AI, and I think is going to be a huge game changer for us. I do think that with AI, it's going to be able to do for medicine and technology like this to where people, and imagine, obviously this is probably expensive right now, but at one point we could be at a place where we have this type of technology in our homes to where we could be monitoring our health real time. And I want to believe, even though I'm not 100% sold on if, like we were just talking about obesity and processed food. Like if you were doing it, you had this access to this scanner to tell you like, hey, you're on track for heart disease in this many years if you don't change course. Or, we had AI technology to forecast what's going on with your health based off of like all these readings.
I don't know if it would make anybody change.
That's what I'm wondering.
It's interesting
because
you're a fitness guy.
Yeah, that's fair. That's why I don't know either. I don't know.
Because people know, man. Most people know.
I feel like a lot of people...
unless it scared the crap out of them.
I mean, that would scare the crap out of me, right? Even if I wasn't a fitness person, right? Like, if I got on a thing and it said, based off of our AI readings, you should be dead in 7 years. I mean, no, seriously. Or you will have a heart attack or a stroke if you can... Like, that would be enough to scare me straight.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because the one I mentioned, it's like just focused in this one... area or this one system of the body, or I wonder, like, you know, because AI right now, it's so there's a lot of different, there's innovation for sure, but it's like all of them are addressing very specific things. It's not like, you know, this big artificial intelligence that knows like all the things. It's like
general intelligence.
So it's either like through our interactions and communication, or it's like now they're trying to kind of focus on imagery. It'd be interesting to see like how many of those they develop before finally they do have like a full body scanner or
you know
it does what you're talking about.
Yeah. You know what? I think you'll probably see that stuff first.
Are you reading on it, Doug?
Yeah, I did look at it.
Yeah.
I don't have
here. Yeah. So I think, you know where that, where I think that's going to show up? That clip you sent me, Adam, where somebody was talking about the trends in the gym industry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The commercial gyms are dying.
Yeah. Well, what it is, and I remember talking even with Don about this, the mid tier gyms, the mid tier, like nice, It's more than the super cheap gyms, but it's not as much as the super exclusive, you know, health clubs or whatever.
That's dying.
That's dying.
Yeah.
What you're left with are the dirt cheap gyms and then the luxury gyms that offer, you know, spirituality courses and red light therapy and recovery facilities. And, you know, they have cafes in there, that kind of stuff. Those are exploding.
Yeah.
And I feel like those places will probably bring this kind of technology in there first.
Oh, for
because
sure.
You'll go in and imagine like imagine managing that gym, what a great thing that would be to sell.
Yeah.
Hey, you can come in here and you have an assessment with a trainer and we do this body scan that is this much accuracy for detecting
like the regenerative longevity scan.
Or totally.
And gives you all this
prediction. And then you do a checkup every 6 months and we see your progress or whatever. Like that sounds amazing.
Well, are you getting any more detail on it, Doug?
Yeah, I'm actually working on something else here right at the moment. Sorry.
That's super helpful.
Sorry.
I didn't know you were going to quiz me on it.
Well, I mentioned that it's been over 2 weeks since I read the article.
I'll read and tell you what it does. So the company runs a series of scans and tests that creates millions of data points and help determine your state of health across a range of cardiovascular, metabolic, and other conditions. Then you have an in-person meeting with a doctor to discuss the data, and that's included in the session.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go.
Well, that's heading in the direction.
Yeah, that's promising.
What's that full body? There's a full body. I don't know if it's an MRI.
It's the ones that the all-in guys talked about,
yes,
right?
Yeah, I was looking into that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a
few thousand dollars to do it.
But you'll catch. It's a full body scan.
Yeah.
So you see if you have any cancers anywhere that before you'll ever detect
before,
them.
Before. And it was like, I forgot what the percentage, it was a very high, like,
yes,
it was how accurate it was.
And there's several people that have, like, people that I've heard who've found things that wouldn't have gotten found for like a year. And by the time I got found,
so this is where I'm getting at with this technology here is because I'm familiar with that. Like, I heard those guys talk about that last year. This is now coming on the scene. I've heard some other ones, like, we're not that far away from this type of technology being accessible. Right now it's probably for the uber rich and it's tough, but that's how all technology is, right? There was a time when only a few people could have phones in their car, and now everybody has one in their pocket. So at one point it'll be accessible to everybody. And you know, the question is, does that tool, I mean, this is a great argument and debate, right? Does more data, more information, more accurate,
it'll help with medical interventions for sure. Because what happens with AI is it could take multiple data points and through looking at other trends, and when it's doing this for millions of people, it could pick up correlations and associations that we haven't picked up on yet. So it's like, oh, if you have this and this and this ratio by themselves, nobody would ever say this is a red flag. They seem okay. But because this AI has this massive amount of data and can compile it all, say, oh, these ratios equal a 57% increased risk of this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
That's what AI is
going to do. I feel like this will help men the most. And that's mainly because they're not going to get checked.
Oh, so they're watching.
Yeah, like, you know how they're always trying to say, like, watch, you know, testicular cancer or whatever. Like, you're supposed to, like, you know, be on top of that and, like, check yourself. And, you know, and, like, all these, like, oh, I have a dark mole that's a little weird, you know, like, whatever.
I told you guys about that a while ago, right, with that guy who thought he was funny. He peed on a pregnancy test and it showed that he was pregnant and he was posting it on social media. And he's like, oh, guys, look, it says I'm pregnant. And then one of his buddies, a doctor, he's like, go get checked. You probably have testicular cancer.
Oh, my God.
Because you're producing HCG at such a high amount.
Joke's on you.
Yeah, and he did. He did have testicular cancer,
That is unfortunate.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know how reliable that is, but that was
I mean, how lucky is that, though, that you did that?
Yeah, I mean,
that's pretty lucky. You got lucky like that. I don't know. I mean, I think about this a lot with, like, you know, our body fat testing, your Fat Secret, MyFitnessPal apps. I mean, this is all stuff that you guys remember, like, how crazy hard it was when we first started, like, to get accurate readings of just what you were intaking there's a lot of, like, and
so much margin for error.
We're fatter today than what we were then.
Health
so did it really help us, you know? So will technology like this really, or is it just going to continue to help the same small demographic of people that were already going to do the things anyway?
I think for sure for medical interventions. I think the AI is going to be able to figure out the better, more precise doses of medications, applications, maybe earlier diagnosis. But look, here's the deal. Our medicine has gotten far more advanced over the last, you know, few decades. But this is the first generation that's not going to live longer than the previous one. Might actually fall short. And it's not because medicine hasn't advanced.
So what? Okay,
it's because we're just living terribly unhealthy lifestyle.
Is that conflicting? Because I've heard the opposite. I heard this is, we might live to 120, 130 with technology.
Because they're predicting what technology we're going to have. But as of right now, our lifespans are, we're
worse than our parents?
Yeah, it looks like it. Looks like we're probably going to do worse than our parents did.
I sure hope that's not true. Because
I mean, not us, maybe.
I was going to say, because, I mean, our parents' generation was not exercising and following their diet like we were from age 20.
Exercise and had to extend us 10 years. Yeah,
there's a very small percentage of the population that are our parents' age that were working out and exercising at an early age.
There's some interesting arguments around this, right? They were more active and they generally ate less processed foods, but then the chemical exposures, have you guys seen, it's going viral on social media right now. Have you seen, you've all heard this, right? Like, I ate that when I was a kid, I'm fine. Somebody put up boxes of processed foods from the 80s versus now and the ingredients. So like we grew up eating Fruit Loops, eating, you know, macaroni and cheese, Kraft, eating it, whatever. The ingredients aren't the same. They're not the same. They're like, it's like three times as many ingredients. And there's a lot more chemicals in them now than there were when we were
kids. I mean, I've seen that comparison right now in just like Europe to here.
Yes.
And in fact, macaroni and cheese is one of the examples I've seen.
Yes.
And like our
macaroni they've outlawed cheese. Certain chemicals that we allow here somehow. It's like, what?
No. I don't remember what the number was, but there's a certain amount of new chemicals that are introduced every single year into the market that pass regulation, but we have no possible way of testing the effect of all of them combined and the exposures of all of them. There's no way of testing that. And so it's crazy. What does that say? Why life expectancy is falling? Oh, COVID-19 and drug overdoses are the biggest contributors. That's so funny you brought up COVID-19. Do you guys know what the death rate was on COVID-19 when all was said and done? No, new study came out.
Okay.
Yeah, a big study came out. Age stratified infection fatality rate of COVID-19 in the non-elderly population. If you were under 70.
Okay.
Your death rate from COVID was 0.07%. 1 in 1500. That was the death rate.
That's not what I was told.
We did a lot of crazy stuff to prevent. We actually caused more problems what we did.
You know why, though, which is interesting that's a true stat, is that I don't know anybody at this point, though, that didn't have somebody who they knew that died from it.
Yeah.
Almost. And so that because that...
Because so many people got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So because that so many people got it, that stat, it's not unrealistic or far for someone to have somebody who was under the age of 70 who got it and died.
Mm. I mean, it's crazy, but I actually know somebody like that, as they're going, they were on their deathbed. They actually like put on a cause of death, COVID-19, and they didn't even contract it.
Yeah. That's bloated numbers. That's true.
Oh yeah. I know
that actually
too.
Happened.
No, like, I know. You know how hospitals got paid? They got paid extra for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just why I'm a little like tainted by the whole subject.
Yeah. There were the hospitals actually got for treating people with COVID and for COVID deaths. Got extra money from the government.
Yeah, no, there was hospitals that were, and I'm not saying this is every hospital, but there were hospitals. I had nurse friends and stuff that worked at hospitals that were instructed that if that person had COVID, even if they died from something
car accident,
else,
but they had COVID.
Yeah, they had COVID. You put them on that list as COVID-19. So they were very much so instructed to do that if there was any way to attach.
Do you know what the big learning lesson I think is looking back at that whole period?
That we're all fools.
I mean, not far. Mm-hmm. I would say the big lesson is how easily manipulated, because most people, so don't feel bad if you one of these people that got manipulated. It was pretty much everybody. How easily manipulated we are through fear. Mm-hmm. If you just scare us enough with enough fear stuff, we'll pretty much do anything. We'll give up and do anything, and we'll even harm our own children, which is a lot of what we did. A lot of the problems that came from those policies really did a number on children, locking them up and don't be around your friends and wear a mask. Nobody can see your face. You can't see other people's face. You can't read their emotions, like all damaging stuff that's going to last for a long time, all because we were scared. So that's a learning lesson. And to think it won't happen again is stupid because scary things happen all the time.
I mean,
so
of course it will. It's not over still. I mean, I still go plenty of places where someone's got their kids with a mask on still.
Oh, I'm still arguing with people over it. It's crazy.
Katrina, every time she sees one, she looks at me right away. Keep your mouth shut. I just can't.
I feel empathy. I feel bad, dude. They were traumatized. Everybody's so traumatized.
Yeah, you know, whatever. If you're an adult, you do stupid stuff. I don't care what you do. It's the kids get me. That gets me. Like that's because the kids, they follow our lead.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and if you're a dad and you're scared, your kid's scared. Guaranteed. Even for no matter what your reasoning being, you're scared in front of your kid. You're gonna your
of
kids.
Of course,
your
they
kids,
look at you. To, that's right. To know how that's to feel. Right.
So you know, and if you're a stupid person who's older and does stupid things, I don't care. It's to your that's to each their own. You know what I'm saying? That's on you. That doesn't bother me. It bothers me when I see the kids. Yeah. It bothers me because it's just like your fear. It has just now bled in. You just ruined another generation because of how scared you are. And now look at them.
Well, I know.
It's tough, dude.
Terrible.
It's tough to see.
Yeah.
But you have Mind Pump YouTube mashups up there. Who put that up there?
Oh, I think people were asking about them.
Yeah. People are wondering. Oh, some people have commented about them because they're not.
This is new. So this is my additional
favorite the,
content.
My favorite of the complaints.
I know. What are you doing? What are you doing
giving us more free content?
Yeah, no.
How dare you?
So what we did is we've taken topics and we've edited previous episodes that cover that topic in different ways and put them together in these kind of mashup videos. It's additional content. So it's not replacing any of our podcasts or anything else. It's just more content, and it's just an easy resource. So now you could go, all about fat loss, all about muscle building, all about
To capture new listeners. Here, we 5 days a week, we've always done a show for you guys. Now we have 7 days a week, a show's going up. Two of those are mashups that are topic focused, and they do great at attracting new people. So if you've never heard of Mind Pump and you see this mashup, it's the first time you've ever seen any of that content. And the idea is to put all that focused content in one episode, and it performs incredibly well for us. It gets a lot of new attention and listeners to us. It's only additional bonus to what you already do. We didn't replace anything you guys ever had. So the people that I've seen complain about are just comical to me. Yeah. How that you get mad that we're giving more free stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, it's crazy. So wild, dude.
Somebody's like, I can't keep up.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm creating
it's overwhelming.
Sorry, I'm creating anxiety in your life because I'm giving you too much. Maybe you need to break an arm.
My bad.
Yeah. Go risk.
Yeah. We'll fall down. We should shout out. What are we shouting out
to? I mean, I got a shout out if you guys don't. So I follow this guy in this page. He's actually one of David Weck's, I think, understudies, but he's like insanely strong, does the craziest feats of strength all the time. Cool. He's like, just does really cool videos and content for strength feats. His name is Christopher Chamberlain. His handle's Eroding Weakness. And whatever. He's a badass.
Awesome. Look, do you eat a high protein diet, but you want to maximize the effects of the high protein, build more muscle, get better digestion? Use digestive enzymes, but don't use any. Use Masszymes. These are digestive enzymes for fitness people. In fact, one study shows that it improves amino acid absorption by 1,200%, literally making your protein far more effective, the same protein you're eating now. Anyway, go check them out. Go to buyoptimizers.com/mindpump. That's buyoptimizers.com/mindpump. And then use the code MindPump10 to get 10% off. All right, back to the show.
First question is from Miss Ming Lee. Do I need to count calories? Sometimes I feel like I'm forcing myself to eat just to hit those numbers. Sometimes I hit my calories without effort.
No, you don't need to count your calories. When it starts to get important, there's a couple times when counting macros or calories is important. One, maybe during the education process, a lot of people just have no idea what 30 grams of protein looks like, what 10 grams of fat looks like, what, you know, 40 grams of carbs looks like. They just don't know. They just don't know what general, you know, amount of calories you would find in a particular meal would be. And so I would do this with clients oftentimes just to kind of educate them. They're like, oh, wow, that's how much that protein looks. That's what it looks like. And the second way you'd probably need to count calories is when you start to get real specific with your goals. Like, if you want to be generally healthy, generally lean, you don't need to count calories. If you avoid heavily processed foods, if you try to eat your body weight in grams of protein, you strength train, like your body fat percentage is probably, for most people, vast majority of people, it's going to fall within a nice healthy range. But if you want to get really lean, if you want to get definition, you want to see your abs, then you probably need to start counting calories because it gets much more specific.
I mean, I find the only thing that's really done, I mean, even getting shredded. I mean, I think you get in really good shape just tracking protein.
Mm-hmm.
Protein is the main thing that you just need to follow and track. It's also the thing that most people struggle with hitting consistently, and it's the most important when you're following a strength training program. If you're lifting weights to build muscle, build your metabolism, to get leaner, hitting your protein intake day in and day out is far more important than, you know, watching exactly where your calories land. 100, like, and I'm going through this process right now, documenting this for everybody to watch, and I'm on week two of counting, and you'll never hear me talk about, oh no, my calories were 2,800. Oh shoot, they're 32. It's like, it's irrelevant to me. It's all you hear me communicate is, oh man, I need a little bit more protein. Oh man, I'm still not getting enough protein in my diet. Oh man, today's a good win. I got exactly where I need to protein. I'm not like the up or down a few hundred calories a day is really irrelevant, especially when you're strength training and hitting that protein intake. Because if you do a good job of strength training and you're hitting your protein intake, and let's say you go over your calories a little bit, more than likely, those additional calories will get partitioned over to helping you build muscle. Now, I'm not saying that just go bananas and, like I say all the time, don't eat like an asshole. So if you eat thousands of calories over your maintenance, then yeah, you're going to put on some body fat too. But if you are strength training and you're eating protein-centric meals and you go a little bit above or below calories on some days, I'm telling you right now, it's not going to hurt you at all. It's not if you're hitting that protein intake.
Yeah. Now, one thing I'd add to this is it's you're not meant to, and it's really not a good idea to live in a way to where you're constantly counting calories and macros. That is not a long-term solution for health and fitness. Like it's a short-term way to educate yourself or maybe to get yourself to a particular goal. Mm-hmm. But if you live your life always counting, this is not a good relationship with food. It just isn't. It just isn't. And it tends to lead to anxiety and stress and the wanting to control everything too much.
Unless you're competing for something very specific. But I mean, the only other thing that I tended to do as a trainer, and I know Adam's voiced this before, but it's like that. Just that 1 week, just to find out where your maintenance is at and just to have that education and awareness in terms of like what your tendencies are and your behaviors. So that way, too, you can sort of build or subtract or kind of maneuver from there a little more effectively.
Next question is from Jacqueline O'Fit. Can you explain how different rep ranges can change your physique?
All right. Now, before I get to the speculation, because this is pure speculation and anecdote, I'll talk about the objective ways that rep ranges affect your body. Mainly, it's in the kind of strength adaptation that you get, right? So if you train in the low rep range, let's say 1 to 5, you're going to build a lot of what's known as absolute strength. You start to work in that 8 to 12 rep range. This is more kind of your general strength. And then you have your strength endurance with the higher rep ranges, usually up to maybe like 30 reps. And then within that, there's explosive strength. There's the kind of strength that provides stability. So that's objective. That's what we can show in studies. You train a low rep range, you're going to get that kind of strength. You train a high rep range, that's the kind of strength you're going to get. Now, how it changes your body. Here's the anecdote. Bodybuilders have talked for a long time about how higher reps produces more of this kind of bodybuilder round look to your muscles, and how low reps produce this really hard, solid kind of granite look to your muscles. I think I've experienced this. It seems to affect my body similar when I train this way. With clients, it's hard to say because I never really trained too many people that got to that level to where you could tell the difference. But mainly it's about the type of performance adaptation that you're going
to
get.
There's another way to actually present it too, is just that when you train in any rep range, let's say you're the type of person who likes the 12 to 15 rep range, and you've built somewhat muscle that way, and let's say you're at a plateau and someone's telling you, oh, you should drop to low reps to build more muscle or change your physique, they're right. And part of that is because it's also a novel stimulus. When we manipulate rep ranges like that, even when you're doing the same exercises, it's another novel stimulus. Moving a squat for 12 to 15 reps feels way different than moving a squat for 5 reps. Mm-hmm. Even though you're doing the same movement, the load, the type of muscle demand that like in comparing it to muscle endurance versus absolute strength, that it feels different.
Very different.
And that novel stimulus will then stimulate more muscle growth and vice versa. So if you trained always in the 5 rep range and you've been in a plateau and your goal is to build more muscle, I would tell you to go to 15 reps because in doing the same exercises, that 15 reps now becomes a novel stimulus for that person. That novel stimulus will create more muscle. Now,
remember we had Stan Efferding on the show, and he was a bodybuilder, but he was known as the world's strongest bodybuilder because he also competed as a powerlifter. In order to get his pro card, he started training with Flex Wheeler, who was a top bodybuilder in the 90s, early 2000s. And one of the things Flex Wheeler did was he said, we need to bring up your legs. And what did he do? 20 rep sets of squat. And they blew up. They really developed Stan's legs. Now, main reason why he did is because Stan always trained in the heavy, low rep range. And it was a new stimulus. And he just got this incredible results from it. So that's, you know, why it's important to cycle in and out of different rep ranges if you want to avoid plateaus and get consistent results.
Next question is from Arky Drums. What is the best approach to tackle a one-week family holiday where you know you're going to be eating freely and in abundance? Training at the resort is easy to do. Just curious about what sort of training would be best.
I believe this is the origin of when I first started saying, don't eat like an asshole.
It was.
I think so, yeah, right?
That was your advice.
Yeah, I think this was like the so obviously you've heard that been said on the show many, many times now, but I believe it came from a question.
I think it did. You know, before we give advice on this, because we'll have some, I have to pose this to this question. It's like, if you're living a life where you are stressed out over your diet for a week because you're on a vacation and it's worrying you and you want to plan it out because you're not sure what you're going to do and how it's going to be, then you need to have a larger evaluation of your overall relationship, your long-term relationship to fitness and nutrition. Because if you're consistent, if it's a part of your life and you're exercising, right, and you're eating for the most part, 80%, 90% of the time, you eat healthy. The way you would view a one-week vacation is like this. You wouldn't even think about the food. It would be like, I'm going to go spend time with my family for a week and we're going to have so much fun. The reason why this stresses you out is because your relationship with nutrition and fitness hasn't matured to that point yet. So you're at this point where you're worried. What do I do? What are my plans? Because I know I'm going to go off, or I'm worried about gaining body fat, or I'm worried about, you know, losing muscle. And I get it. I was there for a long time. But really, it's about being with your family. That's ultimately what it's all about. All right. So advice-wise, hit your body weight and protein, eat it first. And that would be it. That would be the last, that would be the only thing I would say. And then Adam's famous line.
Yeah, don't eat like an asshole. Where that comes from and why, I know it's like partly tongue-in-cheek, but it's also very true, right? Part of this problem why people ask these questions is they don't have a really good understanding of how the body puts muscle or body fat on. The likelihood, the probability of in a week's time, you adding 7 to 10 pounds of fat all in 1 week.
Almost impossible.
It's almost impossible. I mean, you literally would have to eat like an asshole. Like all you did.
You'd have to
try. Yes, you would have to try. I mean, all you would have to do is eat cake and ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and buffets, drink alcohol. I mean, you would have to. The amount of calories you would need to consume to literally put 7 pounds of fat on in a
week. Even to put on 3 pounds of body fat.
Maybe in a carnival cruise.
So what happens and why people are listening right now, they're going, whatever, I put 10 pounds on last year when I went on my lake trip with that. Okay, what that was you ingested a ton of probably sugars and carbs, and so that carbs pair with water. You probably ate a bunch of things that don't agree with your gut. Your gut probably got inflamed. So you got inflammation going on. You got water retention going on. Maybe you did put a pound of fat on. You have a lot of things going on. You have a bunch of extra carbs, so your body's all filled out. Like you are temporarily high on the scale, but you didn't actually put 10 pounds of fat on that week. It just doesn't happen.
Now, the second part of the question was what kind of training would be best. You know, here's what I do on my vacation now. The workouts for me now are more about on the vacation, just kind of starting the day off, if I do the workout at all. And if I do, it's typically a full body, one exercise per body part. And sometimes it's
muscle preservation.
Yeah, I'm just getting a pump.
Crazy.
Yep, I'm getting a pump. I'm going legs, chest, back, shoulders, biceps, triceps, little core amount.
I never train.
It takes me about 3 minutes.
I never train on a haul.
If I do, it's just so I feel good. Like,
I mean,
that's it.
For energy. Yeah.
If I do anything, it's activity. It's a wakeboard. It's go for a hike with my wife. It's go, you know, do something physical. Like, I'm not against that. Like, for sure, enjoy that. But like, going inside of a, like, I'm in Hawaii. I'm gonna go inside of a fucking gym. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
weird to me. Yeah. Yeah. That's weird to me. I mean, I've got a gym in my garage and I work in a gym every day. Like, the fact that I want to go see a gym on my vacation.
Yeah, you're not there for the gym.
No.
Dude,
no.
Just enjoy yourself. Don't overdo it. That's literally it. That's my advice.
That's it. Yeah. Don't focus so heavily on it.
Next question is from Libby Sanderson 14. Please explain the basics of gym etiquette. I don't know what I'm doing. Sincerely, I'm a home gym person intimidated by going to the gym.
You know, gym etiquette is really centered on being a courteous, polite, and thoughtful person. It really is. So when you go into a gym, gym etiquette looks like this. If you use a piece of equipment, re-rack the weight or put it back to how you found it, which should be like ready for the next person.
Wipe off your sweat.
Wipe off your sweat. If somebody asks you if they can jump in, so let's say you're doing a machine or you're using a piece of equipment and somebody says, hey, how many sets do you have left? Gym etiquette is to tell them, oh, I have 3 sets left. But then also, if you'd like, you can jump in and let them jump in. Jumping in between sets is also gym etiquette. It's also gym etiquette to not wear heavy ass perfume. This is actually a big deal.
But do wear deodorant.
But wear deodorant. Wear deodorant.
I highly suggest that.
And just, you're just doing your workout and you're just really putting things away and being courteous. That's really what it's, the jumping in between sets. This one's the one that a lot of people,
that's probably the most confusing.
Yeah. That is
like, what do I do if somebody wants to work in?
To the gym.
And is it okay for me to ask to use?
I asked. So it's funny that this happened this morning.
Yeah, it's always okay.
And I could tell it was a kid who might be new in the gym. He must've been 19. Maybe I went to UFC gym. And I went up to him and said, hey, how many sets do you have left? And he looked at me because I'm a lot bigger than him, right? He's like the skinny teenage kid, right? He looked at me like,
I'm done now.
Do I have to leave now?
He's like almost like 3 sets. And I'm like, cool, I'll be back when you're done. You know what I mean? Like, I think he didn't realize like you could ask that to be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Type of deal. Jumping in is a that's a big one. And then putting your equipment away. This one's huge. Like if you use a plate loaded machine, use a pair of dumbbells, you just put it back.
Yeah.
After you're done with it.
I just always think of like some like little old lady or something going after me. Like I have to like set it up so it's ready to go.
Yeah. I think the big is the working in thing that's probably the most confusing for people. I always offer. So if somebody asks me, I have my headphones on and say, hey, how many sets you have? And I'm like, oh, I've got, you know, 4 sets.
You can jump in.
I have 4 sets. You can work in with me if you want, is what I say.
Oh, yeah. There's more to that. If you're the one jumping in, you're responsible, although they'll probably help you, for changing the weight. That's the other part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, so if I'm jumping in, I'm going to change your weight stack and I'm going to change it
back. Put it back.
Yeah, to where you were at.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So no, it's being. I mean, we did a whole episode on this.
An old one, right?
Yeah. We've done a couple of
them. It was pretty funny.
We've done like 2 gym etiquette ones, so you could totally search the.
There's also gym etiquette with clothing, but it's like don't wear jeans, don't wear jean shorts. What else?
Don't wear little tiny shorts and, you know.
That's acceptable.
Not if you're a guy.
For everybody. Oh, not for the guy. Not for the guy curling. Listen, into the mirror.
We've all seen the tiny shorts.
If you're wearing small shorts, wear underwear underneath them.
So. Yes, please, thank you.
Bro. Yeah. Sit on the bench.
Something to keep everything.
Leave a sweat mark on the bench. Yeah. Snug. See what's going on.
I mean, I gyms are really, for the most part, I know everybody probably has some random story they can tell, but for the most part, I think gyms are really friendly.
Super.
You know?
Yeah.
Friendly and... you know, and if you ask questions and, hey, is it okay if I do this? Or is it okay? I mean, people will normally explain that. One of the best things when you're getting to go work at a commercial gym is find out who the fitness manager, the GM is, and introduce yourself and just tell them that you're new here. Like, hey, I'm Lindsay. I'm new here.
And they'll try to sell you training.
No, I mean, it's nice to get to know the managers who are running the facility.
Yeah.
They'll help you feel more comfortable, especially if they're good and it's a good place.
You know what I do now, because obviously we've been working out in gyms forever. If I notice somebody that's working hard and it looks like they're relatively new or, you know, whatever, I always make it a point to
tell them your mind pumps out.
No.
Hey, listen to my podcast.
I have mind pumps out. Business
card. No. I fist bump them. I walk by and I'll make sure I give them one of these.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to encourage them, because I know what it's like to be. I remember as a kid being that new. I was never really intimidated. I was so excited, but I told this story many times. I got, you know, pulled in by this group of like very intimidating power lifters, and it was such a great feeling. It's like, you know, I want everybody to feel like that when they walk into the gym. Look, if you love the show, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano, and Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
Okay, it's official. We are very much in the final sprint to Election Day. And face it, between debates, polling releases, even court appearances, it can feel exhausting, even impossible to keep up with. I'm Brad Milkey. I'm the host of Start Here, the daily podcast from ABC News. And every morning, my team and I get you caught up on the day's news in a quick, straightforward way that's easy to understand, with just enough context so you can listen, get it, and go on with your day. So, kickstart your morning. Start smart with Start Here and ABC News, because staying informed shouldn't feel overwhelming.